Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles. Today we're continuing our series on the GVTV-GVBN history. Last episode we talked to Jillian about how she founded it. Definitely recommend going back to listen to that. She was a great guest with great information. Today we're picking it up with some people from Generation 1.5, Generation 2. Of course, this was my generation here at Grand Valley Television, so I'll be giving some of my experiences as well as talking to some all-star guests. We have President John Trombley of GVBN, GVTV. Hey, John.
Hey, Randy. How are you doing?
Very good. I'm super excited to talk to you again.
Oh, for sure.
We got Adam Burrell, former finance officer of Grand Valley Television. Hey, Adam.
It is fantastic to be here.
Of course, we've got John Sessions, the man, the legend. Sesh, welcome to the show, former producer and equipment manager of GVTV.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Randy, and wonderful to see everyone else here.
Yeah, this is going to be real fun catching up. Super excited to have all you. And, of course, this wouldn't be complete without Stephen Bellatini, the glue of GVTV, sitting here talking about animations, producing. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you for having me. That was a very kind introduction. Also, very nice to see all of you.
I feel like most of the stories we're going to tell involve Stephen Bellatini in some way, so I'm really happy that you're here. Let's jump right into it. So last episode, we were talking to Jillian about the founding of GVBN, all of the trials, tribulations, the highs, the lows of all that, and she is handing it off to President Trombley here. John, tell us where we are in history, talking around 2006, 2008. What's going on?
So around 2006, I think I was the first special events coordinator, and I had just gotten into, we were really dabbling in everything. We were trying to get into sports, but there were a lot of issues with that and what we were allowed to do. I think we mostly wound up covering like what we could with student senate and early politics stuff, just things that kind of made sense around the Allendale area, but nothing big or major, just whatever fit into students' broadcast curriculum journalism classes. We didn't have consistent membership and we really needed to get that locked down. So that was my big push in 2008 when I really took the reins. And Jill had talked a lot about Operation Proto Hawk, which was how she had kind of brought me in, was just, you should be here. You'd be great in this space. GVTV is going to teach you a lot, or GVBN at the time. And we had a lot of professor buy-in, which was true. And it did give me access to a lot of professors. So that first Laker late night or student life night or whatever it was, where freshmen were getting around, I don't remember where Adam Burrell was at, but he was somewhere. He was walking around, or I don't know what it was, but his energy really caught me. And I was like, this guy's joining GVBN. He's eager. I wanted that energy to come this way because I knew there was going to be a lot of value there.
Adam, I see that big smile you got. Pick up that story from your perspective. Walking around Laker Life Night, what tables are you seeing and what drew you to GVBN?
Campus Life Night, which is interesting because I think these days they host it in one of the parking lots because it gets so big now. But back in 2008, it was in the field house. And I remember coming there and I'm like, I have no idea what I want to do in my life or school or anything like that. But I really want to join the TV station and the radio station because I want to do stuff with my voice and I want to be a voice actor if I can. Found a ragtag group of people with a sign that said GVTV/GVBN. And I was like, is it two organizations? Mystery. Because we were in the transitional period at that point. Instantly, I said, yeah, I have to be there. And so many years later, I cherish every experience that I had, from John pulling me in the first conversation and then weeks down the line saying like, hey, do you think you might want to be an e-board member one day? And like inspiring me in leadership to having Steven stand up in the middle of a meeting and saying, I had a dream about Animorphs and I need to tell everyone. To seeing you, Randy, interacting with each other barely at all until finally our second semester, we met in the lunch line at Kleiner and had turkey sandwiches together. And then John Sessions, the magic man himself, pulling out all of the equipment. I remember Randy getting skewered in his car by so many pieces of equipment because we had to pack it all in this little hatchback. It's all the experiences that you want to have in college all into one. You want to have the inspiring, the finding your best friend, the characters that come out of the woodwork that are going to be like a cool, incredible people and teach you things. Like, that was such an exciting part of my experience being a freshman all the way through my senior year.
That is so cool to hear it from that perspective.
To that point, Adam, I mean, when you guys were making Jeff and Mike write a comic book years later, I'd already graduated And I got called back twice to help you guys troubleshoot stuff just because I happened to be in the area. And that was the way we utilize our resources. So it taught us right away not to be afraid to ask for help. Utilize your social networks for sure. And problem solve on your feet, because there's no budget. Bob Stoll won't give us the money.
I love this idea of, like, we're just talking about how we got into it. Steven, I want to talk to you about, how did you find GVTV, GVBN? Do you remember your first couple days as part of the organization?
I didn't come to the organization through Campus Life Night. There was some kind of event at the alumni house was where I first encountered the group. I don't even remember who specifically I talked to, but I was like, oh, well, I'd better join this.
I think I remember that event too, yeah.
I'm here to learn about how to make video, and it kind of seems like it's going to be a while before I can get into an actual class that teaches me any of these things. So a group is perfect.
That was one of the ways we were fighting to be relevant in Grand Valley, was through the special events e-board position and what is a special event. And so talking at the alumni house, because we were a group and an organization that wanted to be talked about as an asset at Grand Valley, similar to the Lanthorn and the Whale and these other institutions, we wanted to show that we at least served purpose as an archival institution, and we could showcase the alumni experience, Greek life as it was appropriate, and other aspects of campus life. That's why we were there. That would have been myself, probably Jillian Austin, Leah Vukovic, and Randy, and depending on when, Jenna, who was one of the girls that ran the news team for a minute, because there were like three or four girls that came to us and really wanted to be a broadcast unit and did actually go on to be quite successful doing some campus journalism.
John, actually, I got involved by being part of the sports show. I was basically videotaping a lot of basketball games and several other sporting events, and that's how I actually got involved in GVTV.
Oh, that is super interesting, Sesh.
Yeah, Stormy and Ormy.
What is Stormy and Ormy?
It was our first equipment guy, and another guy that was in broadcasting with me wanted to do all the sports stuff for GVBN. They had a sporting group, and I think they had a class with you, right, Sessions?
Probably, yeah. But I was kind of brought in as an alternative camera operator, so I got involved in GVTV.
You had experience in the equipment room, didn't you? Because you showed me how to use all of the video.
I came from Washtenaw Community College.
That's what it was. Okay. I knew that you had a community college experience before you came to GVBN that was relevant to what we needed.
Yeah. And also, I'm kind of like a super senior, so I'm just kind of an anomaly, so to speak, coming in.
I believe Jedi Master was the term that we used for you.
And also a very funny story related to Randy about that one.
Yeah, I mean, hey, let's get into that, because I think that leads us into talking about mentorship really well. So, Sessions, when I graduated, what did you present me with?
A lightsaber.
Because, yeah, you taught me everything I knew about lighting and more, so I always appreciated that, John.
Kind of backtracking a little bit, Randy, I got involved through the sports program, but also it was that same Campus Life Night where I ran into John manning the booth and talking to him and all that. So I kind of got worked in. I was a transfer student from a community college and wanted to get involved in the film program, but that wasn't going to happen for at least a year. So I wanted to be involved in a group, kind of make a name for myself.
I think that's a great message for current GVTV students, because going to events is, it sounds like how most of us got into the organization and obviously had a lot of love through it throughout our tenure there.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to talk more about Operation Proto Hawk, mostly because it's super fun to talk about and say. President Trombley, tell us more about Operation Proto Hawk and how did that involve us?
So we were really struggling with membership retention early on, and we identified that as an area of opportunity. People would start shows and walk off, mostly because they didn't have crew to support the creative idea that they had. It wouldn't justify the extra effort of regular classes. So that was the goal, was to find enthusiastic people that would want to take on something ridiculous, and people who maybe wanted to find a direction and to give them one. Because one thing that Jill and I had gotten really good at early on was standardizing a process and training others to bring people in, because we had to, and we had to offer something that was supplemental to the classroom. What's going to reduce student effort to get them to want to be a part of this organization? We got that piece down, and we had people coming to us to learn more about cameras or Final Cut. We had two amazing young talented editors, Ryan and Lyle. Right? We wanted people that would really see that opportunity and jump on it and help that grow. So that's what we were looking for, was that enthusiasm. And so in that first conversation with Adam, when I'm asking him questions about what is it that you want to do? And he doesn't really know, but what he's telling me is that he's thinking about it and he wants to explore it, and it's amorphous. And that's where broadcasting, it's like, well, here's a creative process that you can really add yourself to any level. In fact, I even suggested that Adam go into finance at one time because he seemed to have a business mind. And I was like, look, if you want to your teeth on that. We really need help here. Run our books, help us with the financing, and help us come up with a plan that helps incentivize people more than just a pizza party.
Yeah, no, and we're going to definitely talk more about Adam's experience as finance officer, but if you wouldn't mind indulging my experience for a second. So I also, I don't know if it was that student life night where I met everybody at Campus Life Night, but I knew I wanted to join an organization, make sure I could start making stuff as soon as I could. And so starting, I was just sitting in the back at that, we had like a cool classroom that we were in Lake Ontario. We felt like the Galactic Senate or something.
Oh yeah.
But I was sitting in the background and I told myself, I'm not going to jump right in. Cause I knew from being in high school, I have a propensity to like take stuff over. And so somehow after one of those where I was just sitting back, you came up to me and said, hey, why don't you participate a little bit more? You even told me you liked my energy, which that moment meant a lot to me and really did help me embrace all the moves of my career since then. So I really do appreciate you giving me that green light in the beginning to say like, actually jump in some more. Don't worry about being a freshman. Get in there and start participating. Of course, now I've learned that there was a shadowy government behind all this with Operation Proto Hawk trying to get us.
It wasn't that nefarious.
Just the propaganda arm.
Yeah, the propaganda arm.
Well, there was an agenda, sure. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, there was utility that needed to happen, but it was all for mutual benefit, right? And that's, I think, what this is all about, is what can we do to grow ourselves and have a good time. With you, was that your first meeting, Randy? Or I think you'd been to a couple, right?
I think it had been, yeah, to a couple, and I made an effort to sit and not, like, jump in on stuff.
But you introduced yourself in the beginning of every meeting.
Yep.
I remember that distinctly. And I remember that you said that you were always like, this is a great meeting, and had like really good feedback after the fact, but you were kind of a wallflower and I needed help with special events. And that was immediately, again, that enthusiasm, that ability to put yourself out there, show interest, is what I responded to. And it was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to give this guy a chance. I found myself in broadcasting. I mean, I was yelling in the hallway in high school and my guidance counselor told me that I'd have a good voice for radio. I had no direction. I just picked a major because it was the thing to do. It was early 2000s. Go to college and get a career. That was the American promise. And so we all took on amazing amounts of student debt under the guise that we would get good corporate jobs when it was over, and they weren't there. But regardless, we had a great time in the interim and we learned a lot of vital things that I know that I've applied throughout the job market, regardless of broadcasting. Again, those were the skills that I learned. This guy wants to be there. This guy needs a purpose. We need to incorporate him. And how do you build a member of that team? I learned the most about leadership through my roles at GVBN. It was accidental encounters like that, what to me just seemed like basic level empowerment. There's curiosity. I've got nothing to lose. Why not engage with that?
That is super cool. And even if it didn't seem like it was any big moment for you, like it was a life-forming event for me.
I'm really grateful to hear that though. Thank you.
And I am forever grateful that you took that chance on me and on Adam.
No, that means a lot.
Yeah, thanks. Steven, break down what a meeting was like in that time period. How many people are there? What are some of the issues discussed? What did a GVTV meeting look like in 2008 to 2012?
Oh, geez. It was not a large group of people. We pretty much had the same rotation. You would occasionally have some new people show up, but there was discussion of how are we doing on shows getting made.
It was always producers reporting about progress of shows. We always were talking about new ideas and trying to bring new life to stuff.
That's right, yeah. So we would go through business. There was a lot of, you know, updates for the organization. Adam giving a lot of updates on the finance. Adam, you want to take a little bit, tell us what you saw from your perspective?
If we're going at like 2008, 2009 area, just for background, Randy and I are freshmen first semester. We were just part of the organization. And then we got elected to e-board in second semester of our freshman year. So things changed for us pretty quickly on seeing how the organization would run. And honestly, it was us at the beginning with John telling us, hey guys, like we have a lot of structural issues that we need to solve. We need to get people to be able to show up to shoots. We're finally getting our membership up, but we need to get people to buy in and say like, hey, we want to produce new shows. We want to produce shows of decent amount of quality, and we want to give people the opportunity to be able to work on film and broadcasting sets. A lot of what we were talking about there was, how do we get people to come to the shoots? It's a volunteer organization. There's very little skin that everybody has in the game. And so seeing how we get people excited about that and want to show up to that, I think is a really important part of trying to learn how to grow everything. When you're really, really early in an organization, that's not the number one thing that you're thinking about. Like, you're thinking about how people build relationships with each other. I think that for me is the thing that stuck out, is that it was so much of like trying to build friendships at the beginning and talk about people being excited about film and video. And I am probably the only person here who did not take any film or broadcasting classes. I think the things that inspired me most, too, were the shows that started getting made in our sophomore year in 2009, 2010, that really started producing a lot of content. So shows like Randomish, which had existed before we got there, which was essentially a sketch show.
Hear all about the history of Randomish in last episode.
And we had one show that created a whole ton of episodes named Lahar. Lahar was, for me, it was a college student's magnum opus. It was absolutely incredible. And Steven should obviously talk about his show that was made 95%, 100% by him. It was truly a work of art.
Well, and this is the reason I originally asked Steven what were those meetings like, because one of the things that stands out to me, of course, there was the boring business stuff, but something to look forward to every time we had a meeting was the new episode of Lahar that Steven made, because every single one was entertaining, educational, hilarious, fun, heartfelt. So, Steven, tell us a little bit about your show on GVTV.
We had a small event where people could pitch shows that they wanted to make for the station, and I had a very brief pilot that I had made where I was trying to do a This Week in History premise, but in the style of Zero Punctuation by Yahtzee Croshaw, which no longer exists. It's now called Fully Ramblematic. But I had helped Michael Prokopchuk with an animation of a Millie the Flower That Failed cartoon, which
yes.
never did wind up getting entirely finished. But as a result of helping with that, I had gotten my feet wet with Adobe Flash, which is now Adobe Animate and I no longer use. But being able to use that software and being able to put together clippings of photos together with drawings, together with text, to try and present a rapid-fire nonfiction program, even though it was short, I was overambitiously thinking, I can do this every week. And that was probably not a good thing to take on, because making even a 3 to 4 minute animation every week is a huge amount of work. And later on, I wound up with a few people helping with the show, which was invaluable. But every week I wound up having to pull all-nighters just to get a usually rather cut down version of the show done, exported, and printed a tape to turn in. But it seemed to really connect with people, and I'm glad to know that.
Randy, can I turn into interviewer here real quick?
Take the floor, Adam Burl.
Oh boy.
Steven, I was so inspired by your show because it was so overly ambitious. It was insane. If you look at the level of work that we were outputting at that time compared to yours, it was insane. The amount of content that you put out in such a small amount of time. And I think having that ambition is like a really incredible thing. But also to hear this side of the story of like you're pulling all-nighters every week, obviously not an incredibly healthy thing to do. So having that kind of ambition is something that I think is like something really great and fun. And if you're a healthy sub 25-year-old, pulling an all-nighter every once in a while to make your dreams come true might be worth it. As you grow later into life, you realize that maybe those things don't matter in that same kind of way. But to think that this guy was outputting stuff that was legitimately hilarious, wasn't just like, haha, I made this with my friends and I think it's funny because it's like a joke. This is something that, to me, if you punched up the audio quality or something like that a little bit, is like broadcast worthy. These were real things that we were outputting that personally inspired me to say, yeah, we can make even better stuff than we're making right now, and drove me to further into the organization because we're saying, like, if we can go and have this guy in our org, imagine the type of people that we can bring in the future and the things that we can create from here on out. And that was such a shining star of the highlights of something that we could go and create. So, Steven, I just wanted to go and say that because I've been thinking about this ever since I knew that I'd be talking to you for weeks now. And I was really excited and I'm happy that I got to say it to you.
That's so kind of you to say.
For audio listeners out there, Steven is beat red right now. But
you can't prove anything.
Oh, I want to pile on. So, Steven, do you remember Robot Book Club?
Oh my God, yes.
That was a joint venture between you and Michael Prokopchuk.
Yes.
Because I remember vividly you and Michael propping this at one of our pitch nights in the basement of Kirchhoff Center, Area 51 or whatever they called it.
Yes, 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 yes.
You give this long pitch that's completely disjointed and Michael's just standing there like a tree because you're both tall, lanky guys looking like the number 11. Michael says nothing the entire pitch. Steven does the whole thing. And then all Michael does is walk over to the wall and slowly lower the projector. Steve hits the button Robot Book Club plays over him for a solid 10 seconds before he realizes that he's in the image, moves over, and I'm on the ground laughing. It's the funniest thing I've seen since Master Shake and Meatwad. I mean, the whole thing about these robots learning to read, one being made by basically a Halliburton sub company that only knows how to kill and blows everything up at the end of every episode. It was episodic, but also formulaic. It was brilliant. And to see these two guys who I'd never heard of before, I mean, there were people at the film and video school who had tried to get internships with Disney and do things, and instantly they're going, oh God, these guys are coming up in class? What are we doing?
Incredible. Let's talk about the equipment that we were using a little bit. Steven, just because we were talking about animation there, tell us, what was your process for those animations?
Part of the reason that I was doing a weekly show was because my equipment budget was, I have a computer and it has Flash on it. That was my setup. Adam referred to the audio quality earlier. That's because I was recording it on the crappy desk mic. The only time that I interacted with actual GVTV equipment to make the show was for the final turn-in of the tape.
When you say turn-in of the tape, you're physically turning in a tape?
Oh, yeah. I had to hand it to the producer. I didn't always quite make the deadline, but I always got there the day that it had to be there.
Nice. Now, Sessions, we're talking about equipment. You were the equipment manager. Tell us, what was the loadout of cameras we had? What was our mic setup? Tell us what we were using at that time.
Well, first off, the organization is still in its kind of growing phase. There were some struggles, and they've definitely grown since. But, you know, it really taught me, first and foremost, as a producer, to be resourceful with what I have and actually work with other people to bring things together. That's really helped me out in my career, working in ad agencies and also working in the film industry. But taking back from me, I believe we had one XL2, a couple Sonys, like a 3CCD, you had NGL2s, and then one RE light kit, and then some Smith Victor portrait kit, and several different types of Sony wireless mics, and I think a couple shotgun mics. So pretty decent setup for what it was. You know, it's a small broadcast station, but there's enough there for reasonably 2 to 3 shows at once. They were able to go shoot whatever they need to.
Okay, so XL2s and GL2s, what were those? You know, for kids coming up today, describe those cameras for us.
Oh, back in the day, those are game changers. Well, the XL2 could shoot 24p. So that was essentially film frame rate, but for mini DV, which is a groundbreaking thing. GL2s could shoot 30p, give or take. And they were good for events, but for like high-end cinematic shows, the XL2 was where it was at.
It was shiny. It had the long lens on it. Like, it looked like a movie camera.
One thing I was able to bring immediately to the game was my own XL2, which I ended up contributing to shows I was on.
Yeah, you carried that with you, and you guys made that a pain in the butt for signouts, because once Sessions told you guys that the XL2 was the game changer and what everyone wanted for cinematic shooting, anybody who was doing anything they deemed cinematic wanted that for the whole dang week.
Well, I was able to provide an extra asset to that, John.
And what did that cost you? I mean, like, as far as time in our organization, because I remember you were a hot commodity with that XL2.
I basically ended up working with Randy. I brought in my own cinematic flair to it, and I was able to be Randy's cinematographer. We produced 3 really good episodes.
I want to make a point. We've talked about special events, but, you know, we filmed Barack Obama in 2008 when he was at Grand Rapids, and we had that on the station.
Yeah.
That was because we could only get press passes to Obama's, if you remember correctly. We got a lot of flack for that about what we might have to do as far as equal time. Do we have to show McCain at the time? And why didn't we go to McCain when he was there? And the issue was, as you remember, Sessions, we did try to get both press passes, and the only ones we could get it from was the Obama campaign. And we put it on because it was a student creation. And there was a lot of fights that we had from filming that, which I understand why that was seen as a political thing. But we weren't trying to push an agenda. We were trying to show that we could document history, that we could document events, that we could go to live events and we could make them viable. And again, bring value to the university. But then also, we had conversations around what is art with students and what is worth broadcasting. And those were some cool, like, oh, this reality TV show, we don't want to support that. That's just too close to this MTV garbage. But then at the same time, we did the Zen filmmaking thing and got a bunch of flack for that because it was unscripted and it was a complete art thing. But then the guy we were parodying and making fun of, Scott Shaw, winds up writing to our organization and wanting to come and speak at the university. I mean, they rejected him, but that was an hilarious thing too. Scott Shaw reached out to us. This guy who had made Max Hell Goes to Frogtown or been a part of that, you know, watches what we do and says, man, man, like these guys are getting it. I mean, I don't want to necessarily speak to him, but we were having a lot of really good conversations with people in the industry and faculty that pushed the needle and said, no, we have a spot here.
President Trombley, why don't you talk a little bit about the landscape of GVTV, GVBN in terms of programming lineup, and then also some of those events. You know, what is a year of GVBN like?
Steven had a good point when he brought up, he had to turn in a physical tape. We were recording on mini DV, and you had to cut a cassette, edit it, and get it to the vice president who was in charge of programming to upload it onto the Leviathan, which I don't even know what that machine really was. It was our monitor server system. We called this thing the Leviathan, and it ran all of our programming. And one of the things that the university wanted to see from us was structure. The Lanthorn had editorials that had a whole, this is what we cover, this is what we do. The Whale had programming. They could play certain songs. They had shows. GVBN was a closed circuit TV station, and we were really fighting for relevance. So coming into 2008, we had a really significant budget meeting that would have been a make or break for us. And Adam, I remember you helping me with that budget a lot, having to go to Student Life and Student Senate to pitch that. And that's what got us to get the studio built downstairs in the Kharkov Center next to the office that was just basically a cubicle center that we've been renting from Student Life Center before that, which again, we had to pay rent for. And that's something that people don't think about. But even as a student life organization, we're thinking about what do we owe the college back to exist? Because we're grant funded to exist, we have to show the college that we have value. That was my pitch for special events and how we could make ourselves relevant and show ourselves to capture what was appropriate on campus to archive for prosperity, but also give students a place to create and express above and beyond the classroom. And I wanted to do more of a student showcase thing, but some of the professors kind of balked at that idea too for a variety of reasons. But yeah, that was the thing there that we were looking at, is what stays relevant and what meets a need and what's going to draw in the student body.
We're taking a short break to tell you about the Chuck Peterson Memorial Fellowship. The fellowship was established by Chuck Peterson's family and friends to assist the upper-level students in the film and video program at GVSU who are working on creative projects that support the nonprofit sector in their community. Kyle Machime, the 2020 recipient of that fellowship, describes the benefits of the support he received.
When going through this fellowship, there are three separate parts of yourself that I think get to experience a lot of development. The first is as a student, because this is a learning process. You get to learn how to work with a client on your own, independently out in the world, away from the classroom, like you would in something like producing for clients. And the second one would be as a video maker, as a video producer, as someone who has respect for the work that they're doing and wants to improve on themselves and produce a final product that can be used out in the real world. And then the third one would be as a citizen. You know, you're not making video for an entertainment value or for some kind of commercial purpose. It's for a nonprofit. It's for a direct benefit in your community. And being a citizen of that community, understanding how you can directly impact and improve it, is a really valuable experience that I think the fellowship teaches you to be as a student, as a filmmaker, and as a citizen. All three of those things are directly a part of this process that you get to learn and ask yourself, how do I want to be seen and how do I want to act as these three roles?
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show. What was the process of getting shows on the air? Like, where did the shows come from? The ideas for those, who greenlit them?
That all came about through meetings. What did people want to work on first and foremost? And that's what you remember the meetings were. And that's why it was all about friendship building. We had to know what the organization would work for and what would it support. And then once we had an idea of what kind of shows we wanted to do, with our modest budget, we would host these pretty cool parties down in Kharkov Center called Pitch Night, which would be a pseudo formal event. And we would host it strategically to make sure that we had as many people in the Kharkov Center as possible. Plus, we had a pretty good reputation at that time because stuff like Robot Book Club would premiere and people wanted to be in those seats to see what we were going to bring to the table. So it would start with, again, the organization kind of thinking, what shows do we want to even entertain? And once we had that framework in mind, we'd host the pitch night. People like Steven and whomever with whatever shows would come on board and basically say, this is what we want to do and this is what we already have to make it happen. And if we thought as the executive board that there was enough buy-in, the way we ran it was kind of like the America's Got Talent or American Idol, you know, like we're going to buzz them in, we're going to approve them. We tried to make it as funny as possible and we got good talent to come into these events. Quarter Life was a heck of an endeavor that Phil and I did to rent out a record store for a day and a half. And it was the most miserable and fun experience I've ever had outside of the Peace Corps. We had so many good ideas. The issue wasn't where to find it. It was how do we get it on on the air? How do we take this idea and package it? And that's what I really liked about my conversations with Adam early on. And John Sessions too. When I talked to Sessions in charge of the equipment on the e-board, he'd want to bring in conversations about how do we make sure we have enough equipment or people know how to use it, don't break it, standardized training. Adam and I are talking about how do we standardize show process? How do we standardize producer relationships? Adam really impressed me with a lot of the thoughts that he had that I wasn't thinking about as a leader. And I didn't realize I was a leader until I think you and Adam and John kind of told me one day, like, no, dude, that's what president means.
I want to also talk about premiere nights. What were those? People have made shows right now, right? We've got Lahar on the air, special events on the air, question mark, randomish.
So premiere night, we're debuting the first episode of every show that we have for the season. And that was so exciting. Because everybody's dressing up. We're renting out a room. We're decorating the crap out of it. We're having a good time. And really, it's like a celebration of everything that we've worked hard on throughout the year. And it's something to draw more people in. I remember premiere night for us was not only a celebration of all the things that we'd accomplished, but it was also a recruiting event. Like, it was something that could generate interest and you could bring your friends to and folks would see something. If I'm a broadcasting student and I see like special events, I'd be like, oh, I want to go and do that. That's the kind of thing that's going to draw somebody in. And it's also the kind of thing where, like, when you, and this is something that I had learned really late in life, and it's something that I still struggle with today, but when you produce something, especially if you're really smart, you're a really high achiever, if you produce something, sometimes you'll just feel relieved that it's done and you forget to be proud of it. And I've done that a lot of my life. And some of the few moments in our lives where we get to celebrate these things that we've done and worked so hard on, especially when you're just starting out, like, be proud of every little step that you make, because it's so important to build that confidence and to keep that thirst for, like, I want to build something better. I want to be proud of even more things to be able to look back on this and see that as the stepping stone.
That is beautifully said. And I do want to jump in there just a second to talk about Jeff and Mike Write a Comic Book real quick, because I feel like you're talking about that confidence, that quality that we were trying to bring. Jeff and Mike Write a Comic Book had a lot of that. That was a show that I was brought in as one of the actors. They cast me as Frenemy, a guy who was a friend that they loved to hate. But John Trombley was directing the first of those episodes. And at some point, I don't know if I was giving suggestions or something, but again, you gave me that green light and you said, why don't you take a shot at directing this next scene or something? And then eventually you step back to continue being president of the organization. And I was able to take over directing that show. We had musicians come in and record scores to the show, right? Whether it was a person with a ukulele just strumming along to the vibe of the scene. We did custom animations for each of the comic books and had Leah animate the stuff that Frenemy's character was talking about, because she was able to do a fun colored pencil crayon kind of thing for Frenemy's personality. We had other animators animate for Mike, other animators animate for Jeff as they were pitching their comic book ideas throughout the show. And that was something where that's a really expensive show if you tried to make that in the real world. And the fact that we were able to do something like that at GVTV was just really, really cool. And it was just massively creative and massively high quality.
I actually took out a small student loan just to get good equipment for us to actually light that show.
No, wait, hold on, what?
And I built a lifelong relationship with Dave Loring, Lone Line Grip, because of that.
That's true.
Dave Loring is alumni.
Yeah.
His son, Matt, is a great business partner of mine when it comes to running out gear. And he's helped me out so far in my career. And that show alone helped build my career the most, building contacts in the area.
There was a website that you and I would go to all the time to look at equipment.
B&H.
You got me on the phone with Dave Loring. That was one of the first times I had a big boy sales call, was talking with Dave about could we rent equipment cheaper? Which I didn't know that was your student loan money, but we had come into some money that we needed.
Yeah, I didn't realize you put yourself into debt for our show sessions.
My clothes pretty much paid for my schooling, so it was fine.
I remember being on the phone with Dave because of you negotiating a lower rate on hours for camera equipment and lighting.
Yeah, and Dave also offers, if you're a Grand Valley student, he accepts Grand Valley's insurance. So Grand Valley students could rent equipment from him.
Well, now we're just pitching Dave Lowing's business for him.
I'm trying to educate more Grand Valley students about that great thing.
Students, just know, rentals are reduced rate with your student tuition. Your insurance is covered.
Hey, that's a lesson they need to know. I mean, that's what we're doing, then. Teach them more and more about what's happening for local vendors in the area.
Well, and that story, too, where Adam was talking in the beginning about me getting skewered by equipment as we're driving in John's Pontiac Vibe. Like, all of that, that was, like, full of Dave Lowing's equipment. So, thanks for doing that, Sesh. I didn't realize that is so generous.
You need to make it happen.
Speaking of finances, Adam Burrell, Finance Officer, GVTV. Bring us into some of those meetings, especially around getting that studio, some new equipment. What was it like pitching to the Student Senate, deans, things things like that. Take us into the rooms where it happened.
I remember having to talk to the director of student life at the time and arranging everything. At that time, too, we were working with Nick Monticelli, someone who's at the very least a really great advocate for the TV show. Maybe he was the advisor. I don't remember. Nick was a former DVCU student and is now a big news reporter. But he was also really helpful in being able to get us like a studio environment and push for that kind of thing to be able to create both things for news shows and game shows and things like that. And just be able to have something where we could go and shoot. I remember at the latter end of my sophomore year, I joined the student senate and really got to see how all of the financial allocations worked. And luckily for me, I got to be on the Senate Resources Committee, which essentially acted as like HR/watchdogs for the Senate. And of course, you have all of your shadow dealings of what's going on, and they're like, you know, Adam, if you look the other way, we can go and give the TV station a huge budget. I'm like, absolutely. This is all fake. That's not true. But everything up until the shadow dealings was correct. But it really gave me something on how do they make decisions about how you should allocate funding for people.
So what was important to them?
They're saying what raises the profile of the university and what contributes to student growth. Those are the two things that we're looking for. With most student organizations, you're not necessarily looking to raise the profile of the university. With media groups like the radio station and the newspaper and the TV station, it's something where this could be a potential recruiting tool for us. So we were really working to go and build that budget up and say, what we want to do is team up with the newspaper and the radio station to look and try to share some of these assets amongst each other. And so we started the conversations of the inter-student organization cooperation to try and push for that. We would go and say, like, hey, we're going to be able to cooperate more on these kinds of things. And if you can give us a larger budget, this is going to allow us to raise the whole university up, and we're going to be able to do a lot with that. And we didn't quite get to all those ambitious things that we talked about, but it allowed us to get a much larger budget to be able to buy a lot of equipment and get the funding to build out that TV studio.
To that point, Adam, we had a lot of really good conversations about what the university wanted to see as far as what would add value and be the best use of funding. And like you said, we had that strategic idea right away to like bring in the Lanthorn and bring in the Whale, let others use this space, including the university. But that was even interesting in terms of negotiation and being new to it, because when Adam and I brought that idea, the question we got met with from Bob Stoll and others was, why are students the best steward of this then? Why wouldn't we just roll this into the communication university? Should this become part of the college formally? And I wasn't opposed to that, but my question was, what department does it sit with then? Your broadcast department was at that time one professor. Communications, film and video was a relatively small part of it, and they already had a working functional studio. So what were we going to offer except for a broadcast space, which would have been more appropriate for the Lanthorn and the Whale, because our studio was going to be more up to date than what they were working with, though different sessions had helped us spec out. He wanted to make sure that it was strategic because as students, we caught wind of what the university might do in taking what we built and just making it part of the curriculum. And that wasn't necessarily something we didn't want to see, but it was like, we're not getting paid what professors get paid to do this. And Kim Roberts was a big advocate for us to stay as a student creative space. So it was interesting, but I did really appreciate the nuance that Sessions added to it and said, like, if we make it just this way and make everything XLR input, it's going to be a lot harder for him to multipurpose it outside of a video space.
Sessions, you want to talk to that? The strategic decisions you were making, and then also you were instrumental in launching the Student Senate show that I believe was part of that trade deal with the university.
Yeah, and also on a side note, Randy, that's actually how we met.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, you were just this young whippersnapper of a producer at a show, and you needed someone to help you out. That's how many shows we made. It's like six or so.
For the Student Senate? That sounds about right. Yeah, we were covering different issues.
And it was Randy basically being the host, and I was operating everything else. I had multiple guests, and I did like a small talk show. It was beautiful.
Let's pivot a little bit. I want to talk about the value that those experiences had. We've kind of all talked about them a little bit throughout our stories. Let's connect it to some of the work you're doing now, Stephen.
I didn't anticipate that I was going to spend the next like decades of my life continuing to do nonfiction stuff, but it turns out I'm really enjoying just explaining things to people in the form of mostly animations. So that's what I've wound up doing. I started doing science communication for a science center in Grand Rapids that has since closed down, and now I'm working for myself, making a show about paleontology. If you want to check it out, it's Your Dinosaurs Are Wrong on YouTube. the inability to accurately scope what is a good amount of work to take on for myself is something I still struggle with, but I like to think I've gotten better since I was in school.
Were there skills in GVTV that you specifically feel like are helping you now?
I think the main thing that I took from GVTV was just that if you want to inform someone, if you want to try to get a point across, you can't ignore that you need them to pay attention to you first. And if you want them to pay attention to you, you need to be entertaining.
And I think you've been doing that very well for many years. I love your show on YouTube, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Sessions, same kind of thing. How is that influencing your professional life today?
Well, I ended up doing 2 summer films after I worked with GVTV. From there, I worked in the film industry. I think I have like 45 IMDb credits for various reality shows, short films to medium-sized feature films. I worked over at WITV8 for a bit. And from there, I worked in advertising, won multiple Tellys, Natty Awards. Gosh, I even won a Diamond Award for creating in advertising, doing cinematography, producing, and editing. The biggest thing I can say to sum everything up is that basically GVTV taught me to, first and foremost, bring people from multiple disciplines. And it's like a beautiful orchestra. Bring all those talents together and make a wonderful piece of music. Because in the end, that's what show business is. You have to use multiple resources, good or bad, and make it work.
That is beautifully said. President Tremblay, I want to change the question a little bit for you. You kind of alluded to some of the internal politics that we had to navigate. What were some of the biggest lessons you've learned about dealing with people and egos and personalities? What were some of the navigating affairs of the heart that you had to learn, and how is that helping you today?
The biggest ego I had to learn how to throttle was my own, because that's where a lot of the fight came from, right? Most of what we're guilty of on some level.
I'm going to dispute that.
Yeah, John, I never thought you had an ego, man, to be brutally honest with you.
I appreciate that. I know that there were people in the organization that very much did think that it was the John Trombley show and that I was trying to drive an agenda. The issue I was having was that we had enough of those personalities and they were driving away really good talent and scaring people off. And I realized, really, I can't throw the baby out with the bathwater with people. I don't feel like, as an early leader, I was careful with my really strong, pushy creative types, and I was quick to be protective of my Randys, Adams, Johns, and Stevens and see what they were willing to give and not want to let people in that would exploit that energy. Because again, I wanted it to be sustainable and grow. And this is a universal point in life of just working with different and difficult personality types. But what I thought was potentially toxic traits were actually traits I just didn't know at the time how to manage. And that's something that, having looked back at my time at GVBN, I definitely learned how to work with diverse groups and develop talent, but I didn't learn, and I'm still learning, how to build cohesion within a team when you have strong personalities that want to drive an initiative that's not in the best interest of the organization. It's interesting because even though I haven't formally held leadership positions at any of the jobs that I've held, having that same skill set, knowing how to mitigate softly instead of the way that I maybe did when I was a sub 25 year old young male who had all the privilege of being able to be angry in spaces where some of my peers did not, I've learned a softer touch is often better for team cohesion.
That's incredible. Before I turn to you, Adam, if you don't mind me giving one of my own answers real quick, I literally have the job that I do now because the resume that GVTV gave me. My career path was GVTV. And then when I was a sophomore, I got a professional job at WGVU, the on-campus PBS station. At that event that, Stephen, you mentioned, it was at the alumni house, I sat at a table with Phil Lane, who's the VP of programming there. And we were just kind of talking about, what are some of the stuff you do? And I listed off all these shows I made, things like that. And Phil was like, oh man, sounds like you got a lot of great experience. Too bad you're a senior, because we have people come in and leave so quickly at the PBS station. And I was like, well, actually, I'm just a sophomore. I've just done all of this work at GVTV. So then I not only worked there through the end of my college years, right, so the next 3 years, but continued on past that. And my wife and I started a production company, Wrinkle Creative, and then work now at Detroit PBS as an engineer, which is a crazy thing to say because none of my trajectory seems like it was engineering. But looking back at all those stories, whether it was figuring out how to make animations and record music for Jeff and Mike, or following in President Trombley's footsteps for special events, plugging into a malt box at an event, trying to get all that audio from a press conference or something, working with Sessions to manage an equipment room. Steven, you'll be happy to hear that I just made a video game to help encourage people to clean their lenses before they go out on a shoot.
Excellent.
So, that thing of knowing to get people to pay attention, you have to be entertaining. All of that is stuff that I learned at GVTV, and I am just so grateful that not only was that at Grand Valley, but it was with all of you, and that we were able to forge these memories and connections that we still are able to use and hang hang out today.
Randy, I just want to say, actually, you helped me open up the door at EBS Detroit.
Yeah, I was super happy to have you. In fact, you and I just worked our first job together this past weekend. I want to turn to Adam Burrell. Before I ask you a question, I want to share my heart with you that you have been just one of the best friends that I've ever had. And I am so glad that we were able to meet, like you said, not only eating those turkey sandwiches, but I ordered my turkey sandwich with hummus on it, and you had to turn around and see who ordered that. And from that moment on, we had lunch and continued to hang out well into our lives. And we were in each other's weddings and everything. So super big fan of you personally. However, professionally, you also are an inspiring person. Through your time at Grand Valley Television, you made incredible deals, brought together so many people. Team building has been part of your ethos forever, and I've learned a lot about building a team from you. So the question I want to ask you is, you were not only a communications major, but also a philosophy major. So wrap us all up here philosophically, using whatever big words you want to pull into it, and plant the flag on what was the second generation of GVTV about?
I mean, the number one thing that I did is build relationships with some people that lasted for the rest of my life. And you being in my wedding and me being in yours, like, that's the biggest thing. And learning to figure out what I was capable of, like Steven, and what I should be orienting myself towards is so big. Later on in life, I've become a leader. And being someone just to identify and say, like, hey, are you interested in leadership? And giving people an opportunity and giving them the confidence to go and think of that is a really big thing that was important to me. And John pulled that in, and there was some other folks too that really contributed to that. It was really important to go in and have those moments and have people raise you up. And when you're a leader, it's really important to be able to continue to pass that down to folks. To John's point too, navigating relationships with individuals, especially, like you said, strong personalities or even strong desires. People are confused about what the thing is that they're chasing. So the story of the end of me and Randy's relationship with GVTV was there was different understandings about how the TV station would go. And some of it just became a social club, which in some cases is a fine way to go. But being able to build friends and having ambitions was definitely something that me and Randy had oriented ourselves to. And for me, some of the folks at the top were looking to go and essentially put something like president on their resume or something. Putting president on your resume is not going to be able to help you make movies. What's going to help you make movies is that you start making movies. What's going to help you report the news is that you start reporting the news. What's going to help you make a TV show is that you start making a TV show. That's what you have to do. You just have to start doing stuff. You have to make something. You have to do something that's important. And for me, my big thing was I wanted to help shape an organization. I didn't want to make movies. I didn't want to report the news. I wanted to do a little voice acting because I thought it was fun. Like John said, the organizational parts were the things that were so interesting to me. Like, how can we go and shape this thing to make something excellent? How can we go and produce things and create something that's not only a great place to meet people, to make friends, but also to be able to create great work and to build a career off of and create professional relationships? And for a while, I think that was something that we struggled with. But I think that it's awesome to see that the organization's evolved so much more since we've been there. And for me, I enjoy every single story that I have there. Like meeting every single character and being brought up and being put down and just having those experiences and sticking with it for as long as you can. And then knowing when this isn't for me anymore and I'm going to go on to the next stage of my life, because every job that you have, there's going to be a next thing. There's only one job that's going to be the last job of your life. And it's probably not the one that you have first or second or third or fourth. So knowing when to finally step away too was a really big thing that I think a lot of people don't know about when to talk about. And obviously it's something that you're not thinking a lot of the time when you're 21 years old, but it's something that you and me had to learn pretty early how to do. So it was really, really important in development of so much of my understanding of the world in a really poignant way.
That is beautiful. And that message of transition, I think, is exactly what this whole series is going to be about. Like, as we transition now to the third generation, we did train and we did try to pass the torch to the next group. So special events, I trained up not just one person, but a team of people to eventually take it over. Steven, I know you were mentoring animators by the time you left. So as we end up here, I want to think about what do we want to see for the next 20 20 years of GVTV. We are hitting the 20th anniversary right now. What do we want to see going forward?
Use the tools you have and really let your imagination and the people around you help you create something great. And we just learn how to work together as a team, because ultimately that's what's going to make it happen for you. And that's really going to help you in your future endeavors beyond GVTV.
Beautiful. Stephen Bellatini, next 20 years, what advice do you have for the upcoming youngins?
Oh, well, not to belabor the point, but the way that you learn how to do this is by doing it. So when in doubt, do a lot of work. Don't work yourself to death, though. That was a bad decision.
Work-life balance, like you said, is something I'm still learning about to this day. Adam Burl, next 20 years, advice you have for incoming generations?
Don't listen to too much advice.
Now that means something.
As somebody who's given too much advice, don't listen to too much advice. Make your own path for sure. Do something great. Make sure that you're doing stuff that's making the world better.
I'm going to take an opportunity here to give my advice here for the next 20 years. I'm going to say, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Sometimes you will delete whole projects, which happened to me, and you will figure out how to not do that in the future. But this is the time to experiment and make great stuff, whatever it is. President Trombley, what advice do you have sitting here in the year 2025?
I think it's funny because you're calling me President Trombley, and that's probably the highest title I've ever held. And I held it when I was the youngest I probably could have been. But that speaks to something, right? And so to that point, I'd say that I want to echo what each of you has said with a bit of a caveat. So to Stephen's point, you're only going to do something by doing it. That's absolutely right. If you want to be a filmmaker, make films. You want to make podcasts, just do it. Anything anybody else was doing, they were just a person at 1.2 with probably little to no experience. You are not unique. Everyone was alone at the stage that you're alone in. Just jump. But don't follow anybody else's path. Do it your own way, like Adam and John said, and even Randy. To that point, I mean, the only reason that we're all here is because of a vision. And it wasn't my vision. It was Jill's vision originally, but it was a collective vision that came about with GVTV. And it was, how do we make, we didn't know what they were yet, but how do we make a bunch of Radams? Jill and I were best friends the whole time we were there. We were inseparable. But then you guys were so inseparable because of the space that we had to build relationships and build people that you guys remonikered Radam. It was Adam and Randy. And it's so pleasant to me to hear that you guys were at each other's weddings, because that was the space that I was trying to build beyond anything. Space of collaboration, equity, and exploration in all of that. You know, I wanted people to feel like their time was worth something, that it was valued, and that they had achieved something beautiful beyond themselves out of that. And so as long as it's being done with that kind of vision, that's what I want to see for GVTV. I want to see a space where we can continue to build these kinds of relationships, because that's probably worth more than any of it, is what you can carry on from the experience and translate into life, as Adam says.
Beautifully said. This has been so much fun catching up with y'all. Sessions, Stephen, John, Adam, thank you so much for being here. And I would never trade the time that we had together for anything. I am so glad that we got to share that. And hey, let's hang out sometime.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
And thank you for listening to this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Tune into our podcast feed to see more of the GVTV story and lots of advice for different careers that we have from our alumni.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.